Welcome back to the Lash Base Podcast. It is episode number 29, and today's episode is all about revisiting some of the top topics that we've spoken about over the last year. We thought it was a great time as we are coming towards the end of the year, and we, as everyone, have changed our minds. There have been new products, new views that may change what we spoke about in previous episodes. So we want to clear some of that up and see just exactly how much the industry can change in 1 year. So this episode, we're going to cover topics such as hand testing tweezers, the pricing in the industry. I think if you remember, maybe a year ago, we were talking about the fact that people needed to raise their prices. Have they done that? And is there any improvement at all? We're going to talk about pre-made fans. We're going to talk about lash retention, and we're going to talk about lash training. And then we may even end with something a little more lighthearted about what we want to keep in the industry going forward through 2021, and hopefully what we can leave behind in 2020. So that's the intro. Let's get started. So here we are then, it's coming towards the end of the year. I think right now, historically, has been a very busy week, or we're just about to start, I think, the very busy week for lash artists. Things are a little different, unfortunately, due to coronavirus. So some of you may not be as busy as you'd hoped. However, I'm sure a lot of you are still very, very busy, which is great to see. Let's just hope that going forward in 2021, it does stay that way and we don't get hit with anything else that can affect the lash industry, because we have been really, really put through it. It's great to see some people that have managed to innovate, managed to pivot their businesses, managed to add extra services, and just keep their heads above water is the main thing. And hopefully we can start pushing forward in 2021. So, as you heard in the intro, then we are going to be revisiting some of the most talked about topics from previous Lash Base Podcast episodes. Now, some of these, our opinions may have changed, some of them they might not, or there might be some new information or different angles that we want to add to it. So if you haven't listened to any previous episodes before, don't worry, as we talk about the subjects, we will remind you of which episode we originally talked about it, and you can even go back and have a listen if you want to as well. So it's not just me today as well, actually. I've spent too long talking to myself, by myself, but today I have Lash Base Amy with me for what is potentially going to be the last podcast episode for us of the year, mainly due to the fact that my wife is going to have a baby any second now. I believe it's any day, which means I'm going to be out of action for a little while. Anyway, yeah, over to you, Amy.
Hey, everyone. I literally don't know how to start these because Jamie just like passes it over to me straight away and I literally don't know what to say. Like, I don't prepare.
We've said what, like, behind the scenes when we're recording these podcasts, honestly, like, we'll say a sentence probably 15 times before we think, do you know what, yeah, okay, we'll just leave that one in. So what you've listened to so far for the Lash Base Podcast is like the most acceptable that we've managed to get without mincing our words. And Amy always hates it whenever I just go, right, so over to you, Amy.
That's me right on the spot. So this year, it's been a crazy year.
It's been absolutely mental.
And looking back on what we're going to be talking about today, and looking back at the dates in which they were first recorded, look at that one, 19th of the 9th, 19.
It's crazy,
that's
isn't
over
it?
A year ago. And I can remember recording that one.
What, the one on hand-tested tweezers,
yeah.
Yeah, well, that is actually going to be our first topic. But before we do, we're going to try our hardest with this episode to not keep talking about coronavirus and how much of an impact it's had. I'm sure it will crop up a few times.
I mean, we've got nothing else to talk about at the moment. Yeah. It is literally everything, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
Everywhere.
I'll tell you what.
Let's talk about Brexit.
Brexit. Brexit. No, let's not. Let's talk about something a bit more positive. And sorry to put you on the spot again, but Amy, tell us all about your business. If you follow me on Instagram, you will have just seen you've seen this today. I have been sat here waiting for you whilst you pack your orders. But
You didn't record me, did
I? I didn't record you. Oh, okay. No. I just said I was sat here waiting for you. But yeah, Amy, tell us all about She Did Collective, just quickly.
Okay, quickly. Oh, where do I start? I mean, it's been going on for, well, over a year now. The thought popped up in about September, October last year.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It all came to kind of a head in January, February. And I started planning to order stuff and obviously created the planner. And then
firstly, you've forgetting to say, what if people don't know what She Did Collective is, first of all?
Oh yeah, I'm so rubbish at marketing, aren't I? So She Did Collective is my business. It is shedidcollective.co.uk. There's a shop on there and you can purchase planners, pens, cards of encouragement, desk planners, to-do lists. There's a few other bits coming as well. I've just ordered some more bits today. But yeah, it's an online platform. It's basically a lifestyle and stationery brand.
Yeah, and I think that's like is all around mindset.
Yeah,
and
helping women in business,
which is perfectly fit with what we do at Lashbase, and
helping people reach their goals.
And I know I said I wouldn't mention it, but you decided to start a new business right on top of the first lockdown.
Yeah, well, it was all planned beforehand, but it kind of just it happened, didn't it? And we had no other choice but to just carry on, and that's what I did. I purchased everything, and then there was a bit of a delay. So the delay was 4 or 5 months from when I ordered to actually receiving the product. So I didn't launch until end of October, but the plan was to launch in like July.
So one thing, this is a note to anybody that wants to start their own business. So Amy ordered thousands of her journals so she could have plenty of stock to hopefully sell lots. And the problem is when you're ordering a lot of products from out of the country, then you have to factor in the costs and timings of shipping. Mm-hmm. Whereas if Amy wanted to fly everything over, she could have got it here by July, but it would have been three times the price.
Yeah.
Whereas, what did you choose? Train?
Our planners have literally travelled all across the world.
On a train.
On a train through Russia. I think I tracked it one time. It was just past Russia, and then it got to Germany and through into France, and eventually got here. But it was a long process. I wouldn't say it was particularly stressful, but it was very you're always aware of it, and it's always on your mind, and then you don't know what. So like the whole planning of it is really difficult because you just don't know what's going to happen next, if there's going to be any more delays.
Yeah, and that is the one thing that you can expect, and that is delays whenever you're trying to start a company, get products in. So I'm sure people listening to this are thinking about maybe even starting their own lash brand, for example. A lot of people have had to pivot their businesses, haven't they, this year?
I mean, plan for it, but just expect delays and expect things to come up, problems, issues.
Expect the unexpected, as they say.
So I've learnt a lot.
Good. But you're happy? Going well?
Yes, really well. Thank
Good.
You.
Cool. Okay, that's enough plug-in. Hopefully people are still listening. Right, we're going to move on and talk about what we've already said, and that is revisiting some of the really, really, really important topics that we have done since we launched the Lashbase podcast. So first up, we are going to revisit something that we spoke heavily about from episode number one, the first ever Lashbase podcast. And like that's Amy crazy. Has already said, from the 19th of September 2019 was when we first published the Lashbase podcast. And if you go back and listen to it,
don't Jesus, because I literally didn't talk.
Oh,
it's cringe.
But then again, I just think another lesson is, because these are what we're doing right now, I still don't think, I think we'll listen back to these in a year's time and go, what on earth were we doing?
Yeah, I think it's more me than it was you, because I literally said one or two words.
Right, okay, so yeah, we're going to talk about hand-tested tweezers. So if you remember from episode one of the Lashbase podcast, I actually run through the maths and timings involved in properly hand-testing tweezers. So I won't go through the exact maths again, one, because I don't remember them off the top of my head, and two, because it's quite long and potentially boring. If I try and explain again, you can just listen to episode one. However, it takes a long time if you want to properly test them. You have to go through multiple techniques. You have to make sure they can pick up certain diameters of fans. You have to basically you have to use them, properly use them to call
it's
them.
It's not a quick job, is it?
No. So if you're thinking, this is why as well, actually, when you get to, if you sell products and all of a sudden you've got like over 100 customers each month, but at the stage we got to, a few years ago now, it was over 1,000 tweezers at the time we were selling a month. It's now more like, where are we at now? 7,000 tweezers a month?
Yeah, that's more like more. It, yeah.
And each tweezer, if you think, takes around about 5 minutes with all the extras. You need all the lashes, all everything, and a whole setup. And you need someone that knows what they're doing to actually be doing it. It just is not a sustainable business model to be hand testing all your tweezers. Now, I understand if you're new or your tweezers are very bespoke and you're only going to sell maybe 10 of them, you definitely can hand test them. However, we, especially at Lashbase, we were trying to think of a more sustainable way for it. What are your opinions on hand testing tweezers now?
It just takes so long. And also, not everybody picks up the same way. Their grip's different.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something we noticed.
Technique's different. I mean, there's certain techniques, but everybody does it differently, regardless of what technique they're using. Well, like, we could both do on the strip fan making, but we could pick it up differently.
Yeah, different pressures, different tensions. And and we had this actually. I'll tell you in a second about our LBX tweezers in a minute if you don't know what they were. But when we went through our period of properly hand testing tweezers, do you know how it makes it even more stressful when you put a lot of your effort into hand testing tweezers and you know they work and then someone uses them, but they have a different hand size, like hand strength, any of that sort of thing.
Left-handed, right-handed.
Yeah, all of that. So, and then they say, no, your tweezers don't work. Yeah. And you think, but I spent time checking that they work. And this is why.
And didn't certain people test certain tweezers as well? If you'd done some, you would know that it was you that tested those tweezers. So you knew they were working before you.
And because I'm not very good at lashes, this is, again, I'll start the story about the LBX lashes first so people know how it worked. If you follow Lashbase fairly closely, you may have seen a few months ago, was it?
August.
I don't know, this year just disappeared, isn't it? A few months ago, we released a range of hand-tested tweezers called LBX tweezers. Now, these were upgraded materials, a larger bite point, and we decided and committed to the fact that every tweezer that went out the door was going to be hand tested and meet a variety of different checkpoints before it went out the door, so anybody buying them knew that they were getting something that was a tested, controlled quality tweezer.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was a great idea. We were really excited for it. The problem is, when you sell the quantity of tweezers that we sell, what we had to do was have staff, including myself, including my mum, that stayed behind of an evening. So from between 5 and 9, we stayed at Lashbase, and our job for 4 hours straight was just to test tweezers. So we would sit there, we'd all have boxes of lashes, which, bearing in mind, you get through some lashes when you're trying to make fans, because you have to be confident that they definitely can do what you want. And yeah, this is what I was just about to say earlier. I had the job of the LBX02s, which is the round foot volume or the boot tweezer, basically because they're the, in my opinion, the easiest tweezers to use because of the size of the foot. So if you've bought any LBX02s, more than likely it was hand tested by me. So you're welcome. But yeah, so we were doing
sanitized,
that. Sanitized,
I hope.
Yeah, that was the other point we made in episode one. Does it make them secondhand? And especially because of what's going on. But we had to obviously our hands were washed and sanitized beforehand, and then each tweezer we had our anti-back wipes and stuff, and we were wiping them and making sure, because they all got transferred from the little pouches into
nice boxes,
the fancy boxes that we had. It was good and we were really excited for it, but it was just one of those things. It just took so long. We were there for 4 hours and we'd only managed to get out between, I think it was four, sometimes five, most of the time four of us. And on one occasion there was three of us, but we could only do about 60 an evening to get right. And at the rate we were selling them, it wasn't sustainable. Yeah. We were sat there. I remember talking to my mum. We were just sat there going, surely this is not right. Like sitting here until 9 p.m. every single night, checking tweezers that at the end of the day they weren't even that expensive, were they? I think Lashbase are known for having like good value tweezers, and these were only, because they were going to be our
pounds?
No, these one, that's what our normal tweezers are, these ones were £20. So like obviously Dumont's are £40-50, aren't they? But we wanted these ones just to be like more expensive because of the effort and stuff we were putting in, but we wanted them to still be kind of affordable. So yeah, we did this, but the problem is we were selling them quicker than we could keep up with hand testing, and it just got to that stage where even ones that we had hand tested, people were coming back and saying, look, I can't get on with them. So we were thinking, all of this effort, all of this time we're going through, and it's not improving the return rate, the exchange rate, the fault rate, anything like that at all. So we, as you can see, if you look on the Lash Base website now, we don't have LBX tweezers anymore.
No,
so, and that is because we could not commit anymore to the like sustainable. It wasn't economical to try and keep going with these hand tested tweezers. So
plus, it meant you were working from like 7 a.m. till like 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, it was fun. Do you know, it's weird though, when you're in the zone and when you're doing it, and obviously because it's your business, it is fun. It's okay. It's fine. It's acceptable. Course. But we knew, and we were talking about it whilst testing them, that it just was not. There's no way it's a sustainable thing. What happens when we went off to America to deal with the American launch, when that inevitably happens? Like, who would be doing it then? Because you can't have a lash artist. You'd have to pay a lash artist's hourly rate.
£50 an hour.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're paying that price to someone for 4 hours and you're paying £200 a night for someone that could potentially get themselves to do 10 to 20 tweezers, then you're only going to be covering the costs by selling. It just didn't, none of it worked. So, yeah, if you're looking for hand-tested tweezers, then although I still, from episode one, over a year ago now, I still have the same opinion, I'm not convinced that, like, these ultra hand-tested tweezers are the answer for tweezers in our industry.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I think it's really the way we have a few products in our industry that are made by hand. Tweezers are one of them. When you watch a video of how tweezers are made, you can see why there are like faults in the tweezer. It's like someone's there hammer and just whacking the piece of metal. Sorry to say it like that. Anyway, yeah, hitting the piece of metal till it bends, and then filing it down. And you can just see how these things with lash tweezers specifically, they've got to be so like fine point. Amy's giggling like a little girl because of the way I said that. So I'm just going to carry on talking. You're right, Amy. Yeah, so you can see how faults can happen. But with lash tweezers, in our experience anyway, when we place our orders and you get, say, 5,000 arrive or 10,000 tweezers arrive, it's crazy the percentage that come, and you look at them and you think, this is not acceptable. It can be upwards 60-70% of tweezers. And because of that, we had to find a sustainable way of testing them, but not in the way that other people either claim to or do actually do it, because if they can have the time, then they can. We needed a sustainable way for a business of our size. And that meant that we have a series of checks that the staff can do, a series of tests. We can do a test in under 5 minutes. And it's very quick to understand if a tweezer is acceptable or not. So in my opinion, I think that that is good and good enough for tweezers, especially when they're at a valuable price. It kind of maybe makes a little more sense if you're spending £50 plus on some tweezers. Yeah, you kind of think, yeah. But at the same time, I know people that have bought tweezers off like Amazon for £3 and love them more than their £50 diamond cut Jumonts or whatever, don't they? So personal preference, like everything. But I'd say from episode one back in September 19th of September 2019, episode one, I'd say my opinion has still stayed the same. I'm not a massive advocate of hand testing. However, saying that, I do think a test or a check should be done before they go out the door.
Yeah, I think making sure that the tweezers come together, that it's got a good enough grip, they're pointy, they're not bent in any way.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, sometimes they get out of our warehouse, don't they? I've seen customers send a picture and say, hi, my tweezers don't work. And you see a picture and you think, oh, how did that one make it through the test? But again, it's human.
I do wonder as well sometimes with, and I'm not blaming shipping companies, but I wonder because obviously we're aware things get...
Well, you've seen Hermes just volley things into bushes, don't they? Yeah.
I do wonder sometimes if some of the other products can push. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I've dropped a tweezer from probably, well, knee height. When you're sat there at a couch, you can drop it from knee height onto something like carpet and that's it, it's bent. So yeah, yeah, it's easily done. But yeah, so I'd say that is our opinion on hand-tested tweezers, which moves us rightly on to the next point. We're going to jump into episode number 2. God, back in 2019.
When we were doing them weekly.
Yeah, we were really good at doing them
weekly. Actually, that was twice a week there. Go on.
Yeah, because I was a new one, wasn't it? We were really keen on that. We really need to get on it. 2021's our year.
We are keen. We've got so much going on, haven't we? So
yeah, but you know what? Saying that you're too busy is an excuse. Say it all the time. Too busy means that you don't have priorities, commitments, or what's the other word?
You're saying we're not committed to the podcast.
We don't have. Yes, I'd say that if we saw it as vitally important, we would make time for it. I think that something else would drop, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
New
Year's resolution?
Yeah, that's a good one. Because I love doing these.
And I always get confused, resolution or revolution?
It's a resolution. But this podcast is going to have a revolution. That's very cheesy. Anyway, if you are still listening to this, please put on your Instagram stories your opinion on hand-tested tweezers. Join us in a conversation. We want to talk to people. Another resolution that we've had when we're talking in the office, we want to start getting back in amongst the lash industry a bit more than we have, didn't we? Yeah. We said we want to start making more friends, having more conversations, because we love chatting lashes and products and everything like that. And we know that we often have a lot more experience and know things that we take for granted and don't think other people would want to talk about or know. Yeah. But yeah, if you have any questions or want to let us know your opinion on hand-tested tweezers, come talk to us. But anyway, yeah, moving on to episode 2 of Lash Face Podcast. We talked about pricing in the industry. So,
it's been a tough year.
Yeah, it's really hard, isn't it? Because the episode, just as a recap, was to talk about the fact that most people are definitely undercharging. Then that they go into the industry and they compete on price. That's the natural thing and the natural way that they think they have to do, because quite often they don't even get told how to price or what they should do. I
was actually told when I did my training.
You were?
Yeah, when I did classic training, they told
years ago. How many years ago was that?
Well, initially,
Amy's nearly 40 something.
No, I'm not. Lies. Let me think.
That's good.
15, 16 years ago. No, I wasn't told then. But when I redid it 4 years ago, then I was told then, and it was something like £60 to £70 for a classic set.
Fair enough. Oh, and I think we might have touched on whether you should charge by hour or charge by treatment, because there's the argument, isn't there, of if you're doing 2 hours work, then surely you should be charged per hour rather than depending on what you're doing, if you're still doing that same length of time work. But anyway, yeah, so we're going to get into talking on our opinions on that point now. And to be honest, I don't think that this is going to be a quick point to make, because, well, I'll ask you, Amy, what, since, again, over a year ago, we were talking about the fact that people should be raising their prices rather than competing on price. Really? Do you think in a year there's been an improvement?
None.
It hasn't, has there?
No.
It's sad.
In fact, I don't think it's been talked about as much. I think people were talking about it more last year.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were potentially going to look at it in the new year, and then March happened.
Yeah, and then no one's really been doing much, so it's been more about trying to get the people in. Yeah, I think you're right, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll give everybody a pass on this year, maybe.
Yeah.
But
maybe we should revisit it in the new year. Maybe we'll do a podcast on it.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah. Okay. If you want to hear a podcast on 1, how to raise your prices, 2, why you should raise your prices, and 3, just how to price, like how to choose your price, then yeah, please message us or we're going to post this in Team Lash Base on Facebook as well, aren't you? Yeah. Yeah. Let us know in there, because we'll happily talk about this again in the new year, hopefully when things are a little bit more like back to normal ish that we can. But long story short, we need to open up the conversation again about pricing in the industry. We need to understand why we should be charging more but we don't, and why competing on price is definitely not the way to go for a treatment like lashes, a luxury treatment that you probably paid hundreds, some people thousands to train. And
if you look at America and how they price, there some of the sets that they,
it's crazy, isn't
it? Yeah, it's like over £100 a set. I mean, I look at Twitter every day at the hashtag lash extensions, and there are so many people saying how much they spend on
some sort of $200 isn't weird. Wouldn't be like, oh my God, that much, is it? Whereas in England, if you say you charge more than 60, people go,
and what's $200? Like 160, £170?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's completely normal, and that is the norm. But in England, I saw people that were like doing lashes for £25 for a full set. Yeah. And you think, if you factor in all of your costs, your product costs, your rent, your insurance, just everything, it just doesn't cover it. You may as well be working a less stressful, less like a job that doesn't require as much patience and skill, and still earn more if that's the sort of prices you're charging. But yeah, we'll talk about that in another episode, so we'll move on. But if you do want a little recap to revisit that, because episode 2 does have some good points in it,
yeah, it does,
go back and listen to episode 2 of the Lash Based Podcast. But we'll move on for now to something that I'm looking forward to talking about, actually. And we're going to move on to talking about pre-made fans. This was one of our most popular... one of our most popular episodes that we've ever done, which is pretty cool. And this was, again, still over a year ago. And we were talking about pre-made fans and how they're not going to kill you and they're here to stay. And this was back in time, at like a time when people were still pushing against them, I think.
This year's massively changed in the industry, huge, hasn't it, isn't it? Pre-made fans.
I feel slightly smug, like, you know, since about 2018, maybe before that. I'm trying to find it. I was on a podcast a couple of years ago saying, no, pre-mades are going to be normal, everyone's going to use them in the future, and the person I was speaking to said no chance. And then actually, it was another podcast, they said I'll never ever sell these at all.
Are they selling them?
Yeah. And I messaged them and they went, I was waiting for you to message, which is what it is, isn't it? Like, there are things that I've said I hate and I would never think is right, and then it changes and or something easy changes. Easy fans are a whole other subject. Don't get me started on easy fans. No, in fact, I will get started on easy fans, Amy. Yeah, thanks.
Sorry, guys, you're going to get bored now. So I don't know what time we're on now, but at this time you are going to switch off.
No. So it just quickly, because I do want to clear up my opinion on easy fans before we talk about pre-made fans. Okay. Easy fans, I know I always take the mick out of them. I always explain how you should throw them straight in the bin and you shouldn't use them and they're not very good. But let me explain. So when easy fans or quick fans or self-blooming fans or whatever you want to call them, whatever brand the brand calls them, when they came out 2017, I want to say, I don't know, the time goes so quick, doesn't it?
I think it was just when I'd started, actually, so yeah.
But yeah, we Lashbase were the first company in the UK anyway to stock easy fans, and they were 0.07s. And they were easy fans. So with easy fans, because they're so tightly squeezed onto a strip with an extra bit of tackiness at the base to hopefully hold the base together. So when you try and pull them across, they make it easier to fan. The problem was, with the way they're made, it's almost impossible to take anything less than 5D. Less than 5D. So you end up with at minimum 6D, most of the time around 12D when you're trying to pull easy fans off. And 0.07s above a 5D, even above a 4D, to be fair, are not right. When you take your volume courses and you're talking about the volumetric weights and what's healthy and safe for a natural lash, you don't go above a 4D in a 0.07. Some people might do 5D in 0.07, but really it's a 4D and under for 0.07. So when they first brought out easy fans and they were 0.07s and we had them, firstly, the name is misleading because easy fans makes you think it's a shortcut. Yeah, it's a shortcut into volume lashing. So the whole thing about them was just wrong. So we cleared them straight away. And then a year later, some other companies started bringing them out. And then Easy Fans have been a thing ever since. We then revisited it under a year ago now, was it? Maybe, yeah. February.
I'll tell you when it was. It was the beginning of the year.
Yeah, February time. Because I remember going to America or being in America, yeah. I think, at the time. Yeah, and they brought out... Sorry, we spoke with our manufacturer and we said, look, we'll give Easy Fans another go. They must have improved slightly. However, we only want them if they're in a 0.03, because with mega volume fans, you can use a 0.03, like 15D, 16D, yeah. 17D. And if you're using Easy Fans, then that's sort of the likely dimension you're going to be pulling off without much thought. Mm-hmm. So therefore, if we get them in 0.03 and they're Easy Fans, then that's going to be as acceptable as a mega volume pre-made fan, is mm-hmm. what we thought. So we got them in, and again, there was a confusion for immediately a confusion of use for them, because Easy Fans are for people that already know volume, they already know weights, and they already have a decent enough technique. They just want either to be a bit quicker at it or a slight improvement on, or an ease of the base being stuck together. Mm-hmm. It just makes it maybe slightly a little bit easier. The problem is they're used by beginners more often than not,
yep.
that don't understand proper volume technique. So therefore they become harder to use still. The weights that are used are never that accurate. The bases can be quite boxy unless you're pinching them or using a technique to make bases thinner and tighter and more pointy. And because of all of this, we were selling them and we were getting, and I spoke to another brand as well, brand owner on this. I said, what's your opinion on Easy Fans? What sort of feedback do you get? Because I'm not even joking. I'd say 30 to 40% of Easy Fans that we sold then involved a customer coming back to us to say, ask for some advice or some help. Mm. Now, this wasn't because of how they were to use, which actually, in fact, saying that, if you use 0.03 Easy Fans, they are harder to use than a 0.07 Easy Fan. However, they are the right thickness to be safe for an actual lash. So here we are 4 or 5 minutes in of me waffling on. But my issue isn't with the product Easy Fans. My issue is with the information and education surrounding them and understanding when and why you should use Easy Fans and if they're right for you. I also don't think that there's a proper market for the right people, because if you are qualified and trained in handmade volume lashes, you don't need Easy Fans. So it's almost like a bit of a cop-out way to do mega volume. But at the same time, if you know what you're doing, if you're using the right weights, and if you make sure the bases are safe and pointy, they're actually pretty good. So take from that what you want. What's your opinions on Easy Fans?
I think you've covered it. I'm not going to bore anybody else.
You can wake up now, everyone. Anyway,
so
pre-made fans, pre-made fans. Yeah, we spoke about them in episode 3. They have taken over the industry. Every single person or most lash brands in the world now sell pre-made fans. It's excellent. They're only going to continue improving. We're currently waiting on some stock of some... we've got our mega fans, which are made with the new generation of pre-made fans that have their pointy bases. They're extra really light. They're like indistinguishable from a handmade
they're
fan.
Amazing.
They're awesome.
In fact, I did stories the other day of pro-made versus pre-made. And there was not, I probably did about 6 posts. There was none that stood out where people knew exactly what they were.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Which I think is pretty cool. Yeah. Obviously, downside to pre-made still is the value for money compared to making your own. Still not quite there. It'll get there one day. I'm sure it will.
It's just how much time and effort goes into actually making them in the factories. And
yeah, when you see how pre-made fans are made, again, they're made by hand with little rolling machines and pins to make them and the pointy bases and stuff. It takes them, I think our manufacturer said to us, they could only manufacture, one person could only manufacture something like 4 to 6 trays a day. And when we're having the thousands that we have, you can see why it can take some time. And yeah, so we're waiting on, sorry, I was saying, we're waiting on the 3D, 4D, 5D, and I think 6D coming in. So not mega volume, but the normal pre-made fans. We're waiting on a new generation of those to come through.
That's exciting.
Yeah, they are. We've
yeah, they are.
We've ordered them. months and months ago. As you can imagine, these things take absolutely forever, especially with what's going on with coronavirus. And we're hoping to accept delivery of these some point in January. And again, it'd be another step in the right direction for Primo fans. It's pretty cool. We've been massive advocates for it. They're improving, and we're hopefully going to be at the forefront of that. But on the subject of pre-mades, something, if you're interested in them and you want to know a little bit more behind the scenes about what's going on in the lash industry, a lot of the time with lash manufacturers, they outsource some of the manufacturing parts of the process of creating lashes to different countries. And with pre-made fans, they seem to be manufactured in Korea. So what actually happens and what has happened is there have been border issues and border closures because of the pandemic, because of coronavirus, that have meant that the raw materials cannot get delivered to the manufacturers in the right country to be able to make the pre-made fans. So we found out about this back in March time, February time, mm-hmm. because I think coronavirus was like rife over in the Far East, wasn't it?
Yeah,
in January time,
actually.
In January and February, and then it's now made it over here. So we knew this was coming, so we made sure we placed giant orders to try and sort of get as much as we could to see through this lean time. Unfortunately, we did okay, but at the same time have been let down by manufacturers, like I'm sure lots of brands have, some through their own fault, some through no fault of their own. And there is a global shortage of pre-made fans. And that is actual fact for you. Any brand that has sells a lot of pre-made fans right now is probably sat there quite worried and waiting for more stock to come in. I know there'll be some companies that have loads of pre-made fans, yeah. but that's probably because they don't sell that many. So if you're sat there thinking, well, I've got loads of pre-made fans, there's no problem here. The thing is, there's a shortage of the material. There's a shortage of being able to get the products. And because of that, this is going to go on through the first few months of next year. So if you're into your pre-made fans, this isn't a sales push or anything, but I would recommend stocking up.
Yeah,
because they are definitely going to get lower and lower and lower. So we get messages all the time, yeah. don't we, saying, when are they going to be back yeah. in stock?
And what we also have to fight with as well is that in China, they have a new year
in
February.
Yes,
March?
Yeah,
if
February.
They have like a month off.
Yeah, it is. Some of our manufacturers are off from February 1st till February 26th.
Yeah,
I think, but that just affects celebrate. That again affects manufacturing. So yeah, pre-made fans. As we guessed
shortage.
A year ago, they're here to stay. But unfortunately, at the moment, there is a shortage. So, which I thought it's interesting to know that stuff, but it's painful. Being understanding we have such a great product and knowing that it's not coming at the moment. We've been told like mid-January,
which will mean February,
which will mean the new year, which will mean March, when it's, I hope not. I really hope not. Okay, so moving on, we are going to talk very briefly about two episodes we've done on lash retention. So we had two episodes, episode 16 and episode 25, both about lash retention. Again, these were very, very popular episodes.
I think they were also requested episodes, weren't they?
Yes.
I'm pretty
yeah.
sure we put out a request to
what
ask
do you want,
what you want,
why we ended up doing a second episode on it. So this was back in January this year and then July this year as well. So lash retention. This has got to be like the holy grail for all lash artists, would you say?
Yeah.
Ultimate, like if you could say to a lash artist, what is it? What's the one thing you want or to be able to achieve? You would say good lash retention.
Yeah. Amazing.
Lash retention. If you have amazing lash retention, that's one less thing for you to worry about because your clients will keep coming back. And
they won't bother you.
You won't feel like you have to spend money on lots of other products to try and improve it because
you won't be sat worrying. Sorry, yeah. I've just jumped in then.
No, crack on. I literally have been talking for about 25 minutes.
Yeah. It's the worry, isn't it? When people leave you, oh my God, are they going to text me to say their lashes have fallen out? Like, it is a worry.
Especially with how it is at the moment as well, isn't it? But with lash retention, there are. Go and listen to the episodes because I feel like we cover hundreds, but there are thousands of variables when it comes to lash retention. If you've got a lash retention issue, because there are thousands of variables, it's almost, and you'll hear us say this all the time, whenever you message us or message Lashbase or message on the Team Lashbase Facebook group, and I always say it's almost impossible to try and diagnose a lash retention issue over a couple of sentences. Mm-hmm. So the worst thing when you're having a retention issue is to put one sentence in a Facebook group or one sentence into an email and send it to say, my retention's bad. Why? Because there is...
And believe it or not, we do get quite a few.
Yeah, yeah. That's the main, the most frequent sort of question. If someone's having bad retention, there is so much to it. And don't get us wrong, like, there's only so much that we can say through just a couple of sentences as we follow up with questions of like your environmental conditions. So you're checking your temperature and humidity. And today, in today's Lash world, everyone's checking their humidity and their temperature, aren't they? Everyone's taught that. Everyone keeps an eye on it. So then you say, okay, have you prepped the lashes? Have you used the primer? Have you cleansed?
And of course, washed it off properly.
Yeah, but then everyone goes, well, of course I have, because that's what I'm taught. That's what everyone does. Okay, and then have you told the client about aftercare? Well, of course I have, because that's completely normal. So when you message a company or when you put it in a group, more often than not, the response with such a vague question about retention, you're going to get answers with things that you definitely will already know. Because if your retention was something you knew the reason for it, you wouldn't be asking. Mm-hmm. So it's, and it's just going to say the sentence again, it's almost impossible to diagnose it over a couple of messages without actually being there, without witnessing what's going on and what's happening.
And also knowing your client, that's a big one as well. Your client could be on new medication. They may not have told you they're on new medication. They may have just been diagnosed with something. There's loads of different reasons, and over a message, over a email, even a phone call, everything like that, that it is impossible.
Yeah, you could talk about what surface you're putting your lash adhesive on. Because funnily enough, actually, I'll let you talk about the test that we did. Oh, yeah. We're always, just to set Amy up for it, not in a bad way, just so you can talk about the test, we always, and because we can, because we have almost what feels like sometimes unlimited adhesive to play with, don't we? We get to run these experiments. So if ever you have an idea or a thought, or you want to test something, but you don't want to waste your own adhesive, I understand that. So ask us, and we'll happily use some adhesive to test a theory that you have to see if it's right. Because although we are experienced and we know a lot, and our manufacturers help us and educate us a lot as well, and there are lots of great people in the industry that know an awful lot about lash adhesive. So Lashcast podcast, for example, Paul and Tuss, they know a lot. So if you want to listen to something else other than the Lash-based podcast, definitely listen to Lashcast podcast. They know loads. And we get to do these fun tests, and that's exactly what we did the other day.
We did.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you're up.
Over to me. Which one are you talking about? Because I've done a few recently.
Yeah, actually, that's true, isn't it? We'll talk about the two that I'm thinking of. One, the one with all the different surfaces, and then the one that involved you, a hairdryer, and a hot cup of water.
Okay, so let's talk about the first one first. I did an experiment where I put every single adhesive that we have on every single surface, would you call it?
Yeah, all things that we sell.
We sell that.
And also things that people use as little tricks, like an iPad
pack. Oh, yeah, the back of an iPad.
Yeah.
Bit of paper, not paper, the back of the iPad paper. Blue.
Jade stone adhesive well, a jade stone with micropore tape, the silicon adhesive holders, the adhesive preserving stickers, the normal adhesive stickers.
Yeah.
The back of an iPad packet, the plastic adhesive wells, glue ring. I think that was about it. That was it. There was loads of them.
So I literally did every single adhesive we have in every different surface, and which then led me to do the second experiment, because I saw a difference from using the preserving stickers. It was an amazing result. So yeah, that the outcome was pretty cool, wasn't it? Like, it was, we were checking every like 5-10 minutes to see how quickly the adhesives would peel.
That we see a lot of the time when people say, oh, my adhesive's going gloopy really quickly, my adhesive's going sticky, how can I stop that? What's best to use? And just so we know the answers and we can offer some genuine advice, we actually test these things. And it was a controlled environment, so humidity and temperature exactly the same, because all adhesives are just all within the same sort of like 30 centimeters space, weren't they? And like Amy just said then, the adhesive preserving stickers, I think even after 45 minutes, was it?
Yeah, it was still fine.
It was still completely fine, whereas the micropore tape and jade stone went within 15 minutes, wasn't it?
Quite gloopy.
Yeah, so it's interesting how these things change between the different surfaces that you use. So if you're finding your adhesives going gloopy or stringy quite quickly, maybe play around with the different surfaces that you use for it. The reason why the adhesive preserving stickers work so well is because they're like completely, they're designed to be this way, non-reactive, non-porous. So they basically don't affect the adhesive in any way.
Yeah.
Whereas, I won't go too deep into it, because again, in one of the lash retention episodes, I do mention and talk about this. The jade stone with the micropore tape has, so the jade stone, I believe, and whether it's cheap or a good one, it often has the glass covering, doesn't it? Which the surface itself can be slightly more alkaline, which does affect how adhesive sets. That in itself can affect the adhesive going gloopy, or make it go gloopy, as well as the micropore tape. It's just the act of putting the micropore tape across the jade stone, you happen to push your thumb or finger.
It transfers like the oil from your hands onto it.
And then that in itself, when you're putting the adhesive on there as a porous surface that's also covered in a slight amount of your natural oil. I know it sounds like your hands aren't dripping with oil, but it happens and it does have an impact on your adhesive. That's why that can go gloopy rather than something else that you could be using. Now, we wanted to know, why is this an issue now, but not at other times? Like, because these things crop up every now and again.
Yeah.
And because we've been around long enough to be able to like try and figure this out, we realised that it's almost seasonal, isn't it?
Yeah, I think more so winter than anything else. We tried another experiment where the place that I actually dispensed the adhesive was quite cool. I then added a lot of heat, so I put on a hairdryer, added a lot of heat to the adhesives, and it showed again that the preserving stickers were a lot better. I just could not make that gloopy. Like, you came down the stairs, didn't you, and you're like, you still going?
Amy was lit. I'm not even joking, sorry to do this to the microphone now, with I'm far enough away to not get any corona on it, but Amy, I came downstairs, looked around the corner, and Amy was literally over a jade stone going
trying to add some moisture as well, just to, you know, add some water to the adhesive.
The reason we were doing this is because that we had seen a couple of people say that their adhesives were getting a bit stringier, and we realized the conclusion that we came to is that with everyone in the UK anyway having a month lockdown, a month off, within that exactly within that month, we transitioned from like fairly mild temperatures all the way into, when we went back and everyone in the UK went back to lashing, it was actually freezing. It was like
heating on full blast.
Yeah. So
all windows.
You come into your salon, you come into your lash room, whatever it is, or you get your adhesive out your car, your bag, wherever you've put it, and you go in and it's absolutely freezing. So what we learned was the adhesive, the liquid itself, the physical conditions of the adhesive were cold. It was a cold, like you'd put your drink in the fridge or whatever, the liquid was cold. So then you whack on the heating full blast. So the room itself, you start thinking, God, this room feels absolutely boiling now. So yeah, it's definitely, my temperature says it's really hot. So that's it should be fine. But the problem was the adhesive can take 2 to 3 hours to get back to its room temperature self if left in that environment. So where people were coming into salons first thing in the morning and they were turning the heating on, but then their client arrived within the half an hour or something, their adhesive wasn't correct and wasn't set up right, which is why it wasn't performing as it should have done. And it was only through doing these little experiments and stuff that we realized that was the case, because a message of, hi, my adhesive's going gloopy, why? We don't know unless we try and sort of recreate the circumstances that it was. So that's sort of one for this time of year and this time of year only, because I think once we all get understand how it's the temperature and the heating and how cold it is outside, we all adjust naturally. And so coupled with a month off and then coming back to that, plus, sorry, just to add an extra bit to it, it's this thing that lots of people, everyone should be dealing with, is the fact that clients are wearing masks.
Yeah, of course. So a lot of moisture.
Yeah. So you've got that added into it as well. And the whole thing is just a concoction for like terrible adhesive. I say terrible adhesive, terrible retention.
Terrible adhesive is not terrible.
But the main thing that we've sort of come to for like the biggest retention killers and things like that is that most people jump straight in for, I must get a new adhesive. And it's so hard as a lash brand to say to people, look, that's not what you need to do. You need to work out what the issue is. People aren't just slinging terrible adhesive. Like you'd think, like Lash Base, we sell over 10,000 bottles of adhesive every single month. So if we've got 10 people, what's that, 0.1%?
You're asking the wrong person.
0.1% of people that buy adhesive from Lash Base have a problem. In a Facebook forum, for example, 10 people all commenting saying, yeah, me too, me too, me too, me too. That looks like there's a massive issue. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the grand scheme of things, 0.1% of people, it shows, especially when these adhesives, not just Lash Base again, sorry, this is all any brand's adhesive, they're made in batches, big batches.
Yeah.
So if one adhesive's off, then all of them are off. And that just doesn't happen. It doesn't get through the quality control at the manufacturers unless something's happened in transit.
Mm-hmm.
But it would very quickly become apparent rather than there just being one bottle.
Yeah.
So again, I'd say it. We'll move on to the last or the next point in a minute, lash training. But it does, I think, come down to, I wouldn't say necessarily the artist's fault. I'd say it's an education problem because people don't get told, and rightly so. Like, why would you go to a lash course and then all of a sudden they start explaining how lash adhesive is made?
You physically couldn't, within a day, talk about every single retention issue. You couldn't do it because you would never get on to actually
even like some of the problems for people's bad retention are so like so small and so unique that
we did an experiment ages and ages ago with primer, didn't we?
Yeah.
If you prime the strip, a strip of lashes, so on the strip, prime it whilst it's there, then dip them lashes into your adhesive, eventually the amount of primer on the lashes that's being dipped into the adhesive can slightly cure it, become a little bit stringier,
just making it
and activate really it. So when you're putting it onto the lash, it could speed up your curing time as well.
It's just we could just talk about reasons for bad retention. The problem that we have, and the reason why we feel like it's a safe space right now to be talking in this room into a microphone about lash retention, is because the sad reason, and unfortunately, and this will happen to absolutely everybody, the only time people talk about retention and lash retention is when they're currently experiencing bad lash retention, because they need to ask and find out and solve what's going on. So then when they come, the first thing a lot of people do is think, right, I got this adhesive from, and they'll think they're wherever the adhesive's from, they'll go and contact the company that they got the adhesive from, or go into like a public forum to ask and mention a specific brand of adhesive that they're using, and they're having a bad time with it. Now, the only people that can, or the most likely people that will be able to try and help and get to the bottom of it, although it's, like I said before, it's actually virtually impossible to categorically diagnose, is the lash brand. So the lash brand's already on the like defense,
mm-hmm.
having to try and let the like, and this is the way we try and deal with it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's trying to let the lash artists know that we are on their side, that we want to work with them, not against them. There's no like secret, look, we've been selling you this black liquid that doesn't work.
Mm.
And
everybody knows, that's, well, hopefully, you know, if you're listening, you know that we're so transparent. We tell you literally everything.
Yeah.
So it is really difficult, and it can look as though we're being defensive, but it's not.
We try not to be, yeah. And
we're just trying to help.
I just think it's, you've got to try and be open-minded with it. And if you can work out, it's only through experience that you learn and then you improve and be able to move forward with it. But yeah, I think about cover slash retention. Like I said, we've got two episodes that go into some massive detail. And again, in the new year, we'll think about if people are interested, if they like this section of the podcast, we'll happily do another episode talking all about it. Okay, so that moves us on to the last point that we're going to revisit, and that is lash training. So we did, again, two episodes on lash training, and that was, one was back in 2019. We did one, episode 11, and lash training as well. I think it was how to become a lash trainer in beginning of this year.
Before you went off to America, wasn't it? When did you
go
to America?
I don't know, February time, I think. Episode 17. So yeah, let's talk about lash training. And we couldn't start this part without acknowledging or referencing the sad fact that our official lash-based training came to an end. I think our last course was one of our, was Leanne in Scotland, wasn't it? And she had her last course recently, but official lash-based training has come to an end. We did a blog post on it. It's on our website. You can read a little bit about it. But if you didn't know, or if you do want to know why, just very quickly, it was one of the unfortunate tragedies of COVID. I know we said we wouldn't talk about it, but it was all the way. But when did we go? February time. We went to, all of the trainers met up in Birmingham. We had a big meeting. This is all before coronavirus kicked off. At a big meeting, we were at new manuals, new ideas, new plans. It was all very exciting. And then coronavirus hit. Training obviously had to be stopped. There's a few things on top of that. I think it came into, we were looking, when you get towards the end of March, don't you, start looking with our accountant at our accounts and things like that, and how it was all running and working. And basically, long story short, it just wasn't viable to keep the training section of the business running, which meant that we had to obviously stop it. And it's got to be probably one of the worst moments for me in this year for training, because we've got 10 like wonderful people that we had to call because we couldn't meet them. We would have loved to do it face to face. We did a video calls and explained to them what was going on. It was all very sad. And luckily we've let everybody have our manuals. They've done their tweaks and stuff to it, but we've let them have everything that we did for lash based training so that they could very quickly set up their own and new stuff. I'm sure they've all added their own ideas in, but we wanted to provide them with like the stepping stone that they could just get on with it and move forward. They're still using us for products, or at least I think most of them are. That's cool. We're all still very close. I think we're still advertising them on the website. We're still going to keep in contact as always. We've still got a WhatsApp group. But I think since it's happened, we've realized it's the right thing. All of the trainers look like they're
all smashing it,
aren't they? And we said to them, when obviously we had to give everybody the bad news, we said that, this will be they'll look back at this moment and see this is a good thing. We said to them on the phone, we want to do everything that we can to make sure that we wanted them to be selfish. We wanted them to tell us what they wanted to be able to succeed and move forward. And we would do that for them. So, we'll continue with that promise. And yeah, everybody's set up with new things. Some of the trainers got products coming out as well, new courses. Mm-hmm. A few have joined a team together. It's good. It's really good, but really sad for Lashbase. But one of those unfortunate things that just had to happen. And yeah, sad times. But moving on to talk about lash training. So when we did our previous podcast, one of them was how to become a lash trainer. So I have this as no secret, but I think it's too easy to become a lash trainer in England. What do you think?
No, I think you've said it before.
It's definitely. You can do a course online and within
the next day or
it's a week, isn't it? Within 1 week you are legally allowed to train people. And don't get me wrong, some people are just born to do it, some people are passionate, but some people maybe not. And that doesn't help with things in the industry, does
not
it?
So no. And it's a generic certificate as well, isn't it? It's not a specific to the lash industry. It is a qualification that you can get to literally teach anything you want.
So we've been, before we filmed or recording this now, we, and I have anyway, I listened to the most recent Lashcast podcast episode, all about training with Cheryl from Untamed Artistry. And they, if you haven't listened to it yet, please listen to it straight after this. It's a really interesting episode, and it, they talk some real truths about training. It's a little bit focused on, I'd say, the US training industry. Yes. Because
still interesting though.
Oh yeah, really good.
So interesting.
Yeah. A lot of the points that they make it transfer over to the UK. I just think some of the main issues that the UK have, the US have in their training, is that they have a few, their training models are different. So they've got like a few people that it's an awful lot of money to take a course. Whereas in the UK, there isn't anyone that's like overly, it's all very similar, isn't it? Yeah. With the courses and stuff. But yeah, so we were talking just before this episode about how we see what would be like the best training. Because at the end of the day, for lash training in the UK to become qualified, to be able to go out and actually lash people, is a 1 day course with some case studies.
Sometimes not.
Sometimes no case studies. Sometimes now, because of like what certain insurers have allowed, which again is, I'm not going to go too into detail about because I don't agree with it, but so now you can do online courses that make you
pass within a day
online, and you can go out into the world and start doing lashes. And
so scary,
it's weird, isn't it? It's crazy. So we were talking about what would actually be good lash training if we were to continue with lash training, or if we could just like invent the perfect method for training, what would it be? And unfortunately, our answer is something that we don't believe is ever going to be possible.
No, unless everybody had to,
unless it was like the law to do it this way. Yeah. Which this will never be that way. So realistically, you cannot cram everything into lashes, about lashes, into a beginner in 1 day or 2 days. The way we learn, we're just not built like that. Yeah. This would have to be a process of several different days, months, or whatever, wouldn't it, to try and learn it?
I mean, like we were saying with lash retention, there's so much to it. You literally can't learn everything within a day. I think the subject of lash retention would be like 3, 4, 5 days.
Yeah.
To go through everything,
to go through how to use the products, to go through when or why or what to use, the ingredients, to go through health and safety and technique and troubleshooting. And
just one product.
Just experience as well, to go through. I think, let's just say you would do, probably work for me, you know, like much like you go to pass your driving test. So you have like an hour or 2 hours
lesson,
and you do lessons over a period of time until you're a trainer or guide, what are they called? Driving instructor.
Yeah. Your guide.
Until they say, look, I think you're ready to take a test. And then you then take and do a set of lashes in front of someone, an adjudicator, ask you questions. And then you're lashing, they're watching you. And if they're satisfied that you know what you're talking about and you're good and acceptable to pass, then you would pass that test. But the problem is that if you think of a driving lesson and how much that costs per hour, you're talking again, it would have to be very similar. Mm. So over the course of however many lessons you would need to take, plus then the test, the course costs would be, and to cover everything and the wages of the trainer and things,
thousands,
would cost a lot of money. And a lot of time. And with the fact that you can just do it online in the day, it's...
And bearing in mind, when you have a driving lesson, that's like one-on-one.
Yeah.
So that's not in a group. That's one-on-one. So if you were in a group, then that's your information diluted even more, isn't it? So you would need to do it one-to-one.
And the fact is that I know if you could do it in a day online, or you could have a one-to-one session over the course of 2 months... every other day, and then you pass at the end. Obviously, the person that does the every other lesson, like a driving lesson, would be the person that would come out of it better. However, with the fact that everybody coming into lashes is a beginner, they just want to get started with lashes, they're never going to choose that method unless that was the only method.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's not going to be the case. So that's where we're going to leave the training section. So just realized how long this episode's been going on. Hope you're still listening. If you do want to find out how to become a trainer, what makes a good trainer and what you can do to improve, then definitely listen to our episodes number 11 and number 17 about lash training. And I think that moves us nicely on, Amy. We're going to do the last thing we want to talk about, as this is potentially the last podcast of the year for us. Until next year, 100% going to invest in some better equipment, and we're going to take this. Excited. It's going to make it the podcast a priority, I think.
We're going to get like a booth and everything.
I've said that for the last, if you listen to the Lash Base podcast, I'm pretty sure for the last four or five episodes in a row, I've gone, right, we're taking it more seriously now. We are going to do frequent episodes. However, we're going to take it more seriously and we're going to do frequent episodes.
It's just the time. I mean, what time? Well, we started this about 2 hours ago.
I think so. Now it's 10 past 5 and the electrics man is here, and electrician's here, and he's going to turn off the electrics if we're not quick. So, Amy, question for you. Okay. What do you want to leave in 2020 for the lash industry?
Without stating the obvious, but I am, COVID.
Yeah.
I just think I want to leave behind, like, how much sadness the industry's had this year and how challenging it's been. In the new year, I want everyone to be happy. I want the industry to be blooming. Yeah. And I think we will see this year as it's a hard year, but I want to be positive about it, and I want to say that when we're this time next year, I want to look back and say, well, actually, we achieved so much in 2020. I mean, if we've made it to Christmas, like this period now, we've smashed it, haven't we?
Yeah.
So all them people that have been listening to people that have done so much this year, and if you haven't, you've still done amazing, because we've just pretty much near the end, hopefully, pandemic. So everybody who's listening has absolutely smashed 2020.
Definitely.
And 2021.
Yeah, 2021. What do you want to see more of?
Positivity, happiness.
Yes, yes.
The industry growing.
We were just talking about that with our Lash Base brand vision, mission, and the voice that we want to have. We are ready to refocus in 2021, aren't we? We're all about, we've had a really uplifting meeting about the Lash Base brand. It's all about community. We want people to experience our amazing customer service, amazing products. We're going to give away a lot of free education, as well as have links with lots of very good educators that we can point people in the right directions for. And we want people to feel like they have a friend, that they've got someone's got their back.
Cue the music.
Yeah.
I think it was really interesting as well, because we both went away and had a think about the vision, didn't we? And we literally both came up with the same points, which was really good to see, because we're both on the same page and we know how we kind of
I was up until nearly midnight last night thinking about this, and I've made a really smart, I say smart document, it was on my notes on my iPad, but I had laid it out really well and really thought about it. I'd done a lot of research and came up with this. And then I came in and said, Amy, look at this. And then she just pulled out something that she had done months ago and said,
Maybe a year ago.
Yeah, this is exactly the same as me, Jamie.
We literally had the same thoughts.
But we've got a great, a new renewed mission statement. We're going to be pushing more about it. The Lash Base voice is going to be one that you'll recognize, but we're just going to lean, not that loud, but playful, kind, open, transparent, educational,
which we are anyway.
Yeah,
but we are just going to make people more aware of it. That's why I said
personal
loud.
We're making more friends, aren't we?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, for me, I'm leaving Easy Fans and Sensitive Adhesive.
Easy Fans, Jamie.
No, they can stay. They can stay. I'll leave behind the lack of education and information around Easy Fans. How about that? They can stay.
I didn't know you had a problem with them, to be honest. You hadn't mentioned it.
Well, let me tell you something. And Sensitive Adhesive, just because for the life of me, if you've got an allergy to cyanoacrylate or your eyes just suddenly explode from it, then just... don't put your clients through it. Don't risk it. It's the whole, I keep seeing a meme about it. It's like, well, I'm allergic to peanuts, but don't eat peanuts. Okay, well, I'm allergic to something else. Well, don't do that then. Well, I'm allergic to lash extensions, lash adhesive. Oh, just try one more time. Yeah, like
not worth
sensitive
it.
Adhesive. I'm yet to find or be aware of one that actually does what it says on the tin and lasts, unfortunately. But what I want to see more of in 2021 is, for me, along with everything that you've just said, because I'm really excited about the direction the industry could go in with just that positive push and community, I want to see more product innovation. I know we're working on a few things, but 2020 has been a bit of a downer for innovation on products and things, because just because of the year that it's been, whereas like the year before was breakout for pre-mades. It was lots of different, I'm just trying to think now of these.
I'm just thinking at the beginning of this year, we launched a lot of new products as well, didn't we?
Yeah.
But there's been nothing recently that we've been working on that's going to be...
Apart from the stuff for next year as but I'm not even going to mention it just yet.
But towards the end of this year, there's not been anything that's been breakthrough.
No, I want to see some more stuff. I don't even know what it is. If you've got any ideas for the way to think about it and the way to solve this is to think about a problem that you have. What could solve a problem? What could solve your problem that you have? And feel free just to DM us with that, the answer to it. And then, well, we did though. We had Genevieve, who organises the Lash Social, Lash event and competition and awards in the UK. She came to me with an idea and said, Jamie, I've had an idea for something that removes excess makeup from eyelash extensions, because people, when they've got lash extensions, when they put on, eyeshadows, that it was, makeup on and around the eye area, you can get powdery stuff on your lashes. And then if you have to use a face wipe to try and get that off, you then affect your the eye makeup around. So there needs to be something that you could specifically use to wipe and get clean lashes that's safe for lash extensions, but doesn't affect your makeup. That's where Finalize was created. All thanks to Genevieve coming to us with a problem. Okay. So shout out, she was the person that thought of it.
The inventor.
We got it made in the UK as well, which is pretty cool. And it's been an amazing retail product ever since. So yeah, so if you have any other ideas, definitely send them our way, because we can make stuff happen. We like making stuff happen though.
It's all very powerful.
This is the new Jamie. Not really. Anyway, and that's the end of that. Bye. No, but that does bring us to the end of the Lash Base podcast, episode number 29, the most popular topics revisited. You might not hear from me for a little while because my wife is just about to pop. So I'll have some paternity leave and spend some time at home.
So it'll all be down to me.
All be down to Amy. If not, we're getting back on the Lash Base podcast in the new year. So if we don't hear from you before then, which hopefully we do, because please, if you're still listening right now, screenshot it, post it onto Instagram stories and tag us, and we'll make sure to share every single person that tags us in their Instagram story to show that they're listening. And yeah, and also DM us, because we'll happily chat with you as well. But if not, have a lovely Christmas and have a lovely new year.
Merry Christmas.
See you later.